Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Hello and welcome to Gabagool, a Sopranos podcast hosted by me, Ben Vanel, and you, Adam Knox.
That's
and
me.
Opening the show, we've got a musical guest. Please welcome to the stage, take it away, Richie Santini and Visiting Day.
Oh man, I wish I could sing my favorite lyric from his songs and comfortable feel good about putting that into, you know, podcast servers, but we'll get into it.
Yes.
Richie, what's his last name? Richie
Santini.
Santini,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. God, I was trying to recall even the tune of one of their fake songs and I couldn't.
How good
they are.
Fall asleep. It's 3 a.m. and I've been lonely. That one, the fact that she favorably compares them to Matchbox 20 does make me think that these songs and this band are perfectly written for the time period.
Right. Yes.
You forget what like the shithouse songs of certain time periods were. You know, you go back and your memory of the late 90s is only of the good stuff. Your Mambo's number five.
Of course.
Macca's Rainer. Your
yes.
Your you know, songs like that. I can't think of a third one. That's bad.
Your Rollins.
Your Rollins. Yeah. Rollins.
Henry's probably the best of those songs. Yes.
But it is well written for that, but it is a series of joke songs, basically, in this, the worst episode yet of The Sopranos.
Yeah, takes some weird angles, some weird perspectives, and introduces some characters that, like, I don't know. Yeah, the writing is not as good, perhaps, as anything else.
Right.
It was a funny episode, but not in the same way that other episodes have been funny, I don't think.
It just feels very side story as well, much more than any of the others yet. Did we mention it's episode 10, A Hit is a Hit?
A Hit is a Hit, yes. Multiple meanings.
Well, at
to
least
the title.
Two.
Yep.
It opens up with who you got here. You got Paulie, you got Big Pussy, and you got Christopher.
Yep.
Sticking their heads around from a big fake refrigerator, like the Three Stooges. They're doing some kind of crime thing. I'm not entirely sure who this guy that they've, you know, some guy was going to an apartment to deliver some money, I guess. And they shoot him, they take it all out in a big refrigerator box, but like, I'm not quite sure what the money is about or what the thing that they are interrupting and stealing the money from is. Seems like a drug thing. One of them says, these fucking crackheads and their small bills.
Yeah, he does. This is not something that's been set up before this. There's no reason for you to know what this is. It is, from memory, a Colombian cartel dealing drugs in New Jersey, out of Port Newark.
Right.
So it's just competition. It's not something that's been set up in the plot earlier. But it is a big score for the Soprano gang.
And I think they kind of say a thing or two here and there to give you an idea of, you know, what it all is. But then Tony back home, he's had nothing to do with the actual, you know, pulling of the trigger. He's back home talking to his doctor neighbor. We've heard about the Cusimanos before.
Yes.
And here's one of them. I forget his first name, but Coos is here.
Apparently his first name is Bruce from the recap. Yeah, right? That doesn't sound right at all. I thought it was like Joe or something, but no, it is
Bruce.
It is apparently Bruce. I'll double check on on IMDb. I don't think it has the full cast. Well, because I think all cast and crew.
Yeah, people only really call him like Dr. Cusimano or the Cusimanos or whatever.
Yeah, so it is Bruce. There you go. But yes, you're right. We've heard Dr. Cusimano a lot.
Yeah, he's been fucking used Bruce. to make an example to his kids of like, well, the Cusimanos are normal, so we must be normal. We live next door to him.
Yep,
that
totally.
Sort of thing. Tony's giving him some, illegal Cuban cigars. I think they're Cuban.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They definitely are. Because the doctor is like, aren't these illegal?
Yeah. Because Dr. Cusimano referred Tony to Dr. Melfi.
Mm.
So the cigars are a thank you. And then because they're too much of a thank you, Cusimano's like, well, how about you come down to the golf club sometime?
Yeah. Yeah, come play around. The back nine's wicked or something like that.
Yeah, I think he says the back nine is wicked later on. They're starting it seems like they clearly don't know each other that well. You'd assume that Carmella was part of getting that referral off of Cusimano for Melfi.
Yeah, true. That's a good point.
Which makes it even weirder that she thought that Melfi was a man for a long time, but whatever.
Right.
The point is, they're being thanked, and maybe the Cusimanos and the Sopranos are going to get a little tighter. But you know what ain't tight? Money around these parts.
Oh, yeah. A lot of loose bills.
A lot of loose small bills, because Paulie and Tony and Christopher are all celebrating the big score. Tony's telling Christopher, we gotta put this shit in stocks.
Yeah, go legit, you know, make this money work for us. Don't, don't get it caught up in the shit we're always caught up in.
Exactly. They want to put their money into legitimate financial things, and Paulie's girlfriend here wants him to put his big dick into the jacuzzi.
That's right.
They're having a celebration. But Chris, like the rest of them, they're all in like, dressing gowns and shit. But Chris is wearing a nice red suit, and he's going to take Adriana out for a dinner and stuff.
Yes, they're going to musical theater.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to see Rent.
Yeah, they're going to see Rent.
I think Rent must have been like the big musical of the day because I'm sure there were Simpsons episodes and shit that were like, oh, Rent.
Yeah. While we were kids, because Cats was like the longest running one of all time.
Right. There was a lot of Cats jokes.
Yeah. But Rent was also big. I guess in 1999.
Yeah. And then they're going to get like a burger afterwards as well because they're still hungry after the fancy restaurant.
Yeah.
And Chris is being a fucking asshole. He's yelling at everyone, being like, hey, let me get a burger.
Yeah. Hey, this is racism over here. Yeah. I see what's happening. And probably says a couple of slurs.
Yeah. There's a few thrown around in this particular episode.
Yeah.
And then a guy comes up to him. He's like, you're pretty fucking bold, dude. What is going on here? Because I think like a cop tells him like he's only bold because he's fucking mates with Tony Soprano.
Yeah. Which is interesting, right? Because it feels like it's fuck, what's his name? The guy, Massive Genius.
Yeah, that's it. And a bunch great of like, fucking name, actually.
It's not bad. And his entourage are there. But then the cop is like whispering to, I don't know. I guess, they're all annoyed by this guy, I guess.
Crooked cop.
By Chris.
No, he knows these guys but doesn't know Chris, doesn't like Chris. Mm. He's like, hey, if you want to fuck him up.
Yeah,
that's
true.
The impression I'm getting. But they invite Chris to a party at Massive Genius's house. But I'm pretty sure they don't give him the address or anything. They walk off before any of that exchange happens. So somehow Christopher and Adriana find their way to Massive Genius's house because Massive Genius wants to talk business.
Yeah, and like this whole setup is one of many issues with the episode because like that, I didn't buy that, right? Like I thought as well, cause, like, you know, I saw this probably a decade ago, so I remember nothing really.
Right.
When this is getting set up in the burger shop and stuff, I'm like, they're definitely just going to beat him up. Like, Christopher's being a dickhead. Mm. There's no reason for them to, like, have a natural sort of coming together at all. And the segue into, like, you come up to the house. It all happens in, like, 60 seconds, and all this thinking.
It's weird because the business that Massive Genius wanted to talk about is that Hesh, who we already know this about Hesh, he has a bunch of the royalty rights to old music that he was a producer of that was done by a lot of black musicians mainly, and he took a lot of the money off of them, pretty much. Yep. He screwed them out of money. And Massive Genius was, I think his uncle was one of the musicians back in the day.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So,
or it's not even literally a family relation. I think he like says at some point he refers to the woman as his auntie, but it's like, you know, a friend of a friend's, you know. But I assume it's like, you know, I'm sure we all had these people in our lives of like, oh, it's Auntie Bill, but it's like your dad's mate or something.
Right. Whatever it is, he has a connection to the people of the time, and he's like, hey, look, the way I figure it, Hesh owes me money. But so Massive Genius already knows Hesh, or about Hesh at least. He already knows that Christopher is connected to Tony Soprano, who is connected to Hesh. Mm-hmm. So he has enough prior knowledge of all these people that randomly meeting Christopher in a burger shop makes no fucking sense at all.
No, that being the like inciting incident to be like, finally, I'll get a sit down. Because Chris isn't high up in the Soprano crew. He's a soldier. You know, he's not. It's not like he bumped into Paulie or something and got talking. It's not a natural jump for the plot. It feels very forced.
Jimmy's mother, who I'm content to call my aunt, is how he says. Right. So yeah, he just family, friends, and close ties, and all that sort of shit.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I want you to set up a meeting with Hesh because I want this. I want what I'm owed.
Right. And which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Massive
it's
genius.
Just, not a
quite clever. I'd have called
it's
him.
Not an elegant way to get there, but obviously he, you know, this. These reparations are deserved, and it just is, a bit clunky of a setup.
But yeah, the idea that these guys couldn't get a meeting with Hesh, like, without having to go through this fucking dude they meet randomly, when, like, a guy who owned a hotel was having meetings with Tony Sopranos pretty easily because he wanted to kill his son-in-law.
Totally, yes. Tony Sopranos. why didn't he just go to Hesh? Like, they... You know, you'll probably know where he lives. Like,
it's just it's one of the things that is just like a bit more of a jump than normal in this episode, or a bit more silly than normal in this episode.
Yeah,
because now, you know, they spend the night at the party. They get home. They're talking, and Christopher's like, look, whatever. Why aren't the Italians still in the music business? He was making a lot of money. Yeah. Look at his nice house. And what kind of fucking house do I have? Not a nice house.
Yeah, it's just a little apartment. But and they're like Frankie Valli, and you're like, they're bringing up all these great Italian singers and be like, hey, why don't we, what's going on? What's, you know,
how come we
the romance of it.
Right. And so I think this is where, also Adriana's like, hey, you want to talk about good Italian singers? Bon Jovi. I'm like, is he Italian?
That's right. I think he's from Jersey. I don't know if he's Italian, but I don't know shit about Bon Jovi.
So. No, but... All right, I guess Bon Jovi is Italian. They're sort of going like, well, why the fuck aren't we in the music business? Why does this guy think he can boss us around when we used to be the bosses of music? How come he's exploiting us now? We should still be exploiting him. That's reparations.
Exactly. Yes. The boss, he was an Italian. No, Springsteen is not an Italian name. He's a Jersey guy.
That's true. I bet they'd like Springsteen.
Yeah, for sure.
Tony also gets home quite late, as in early. Mm-hmm. He gets home in the morning. Carmela doesn't seem to give a shit at all. She's talking money. She's talking college. She's stressing about stuff like that. And Tony kind of lets on like, hey, maybe we don't have to worry too much about money for the moment, huh?
Yes. Yeah, because they're like dithering about, well, she is, about Meadow, where Meadow's going to go, and like, well, this place is good. You know, this is a good place, but it's expensive. The scholarship will help. Yeah. Tony's like, maybe.
She's talking about like, hey, what if you end up dead? What am I meant to do?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What if, for example, I mean, I'm going to say you get hit by a truck, but I mean somebody shoots you in the head. What if that were to happen?
A truck is a nickname for a bullet.
Right.
That's what I'm...
Because Tony's going like, oh, don't worry, you'll be looked after. But I think Carmella is kind of getting at here like, okay, but if they decided you're out, who's looking after us? Like,
right, true, that's true.
If our insurance policy is the same truck that's likely to hit you, so...
Yeah.
And he's munching on gabagool out of the fridge and he's saying, ah, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. Which, yeah, you're right, like... financially, he's like, no, we just got a great score, but he's not taking into account, he is being prideful in assuming that he could never be hit because he's Tony Soprano.
Exactly, because Carmella's trying to sort out their real life Meadows College, and she's also like, oh, the Walkers or whoever have invited us to some dinner.
That's
he's
right.
Like, all right, I'll go. Because, look, even Cusimano asked me to go play some golf, so maybe we're getting in with the, you know, the neighbors.
Yeah, the citizens. We've got to, you know, we're becoming part of society.
And Christopher and Adriana are out having another dinner again. And this is where she's starting to think, hey, you know what? We were talking about the music business. Maybe I could be in the music business. Yeah. I know one guy who I was friends with since I was a kid who has a band.
Yep. I was a... like a maitre d' at a restaurant. I meet a lot of people. I think that's what it was. Or she ran a bar or something like that. Yeah. But she was like, I meet a lot of famous people.
She worked at Artie Bucco's restaurant before they blew it up, I'm pretty
sure.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah. She was a hostess or something, yes.
So she's like, I could do it. I've managed big egos. You know, that I listen. I think it's later on that Christopher says this, but he's like, you know, with all the radio you listen to, you probably would be good at this. They just have absolutely... just really jumping in with no reason to think it's going to go well, but they're jumping in confidently.
Totally. I think I can't remember if I made this reference on this podcast or Filthy Casuals, but this has strong George Costanza, unemployed, sitting at the coffee table in Seinfeld's apartment being like, oh, I watch a lot of sports. Maybe I could be a commentator.
Yeah, yeah, like exactly.
It's basically that.
Yeah. So they're going into that. Christopher is saying that he's going to set up a meeting with Hesh, a massive genius. And so maybe Massive Genius would be interested in these bands.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'll owe Christopher a favor after the Hesh meeting set up. So they play a little bit of this band who used to be called Defiler.
Yeah.
But now they're called... What was it? Avenged Sevenfold? I can't remember what their name was.
Fucking Visiting Day.
Visiting Day.
The song they play when they were Defiler is all about being Defilers.
Yeah.
It's the worst song. It's like you just say your name. They're like a Pokemon.
I'm a Defiler. Get out of my way. Stop being so gay is the lyrics. I can't remember the tune.
God.
But it's a terrible song that is very well written as a terrible song, kind of.
Yes. Yes.
But it still is not appropriate for this show, really, because it is slightly too silly.
Yep, it's too silly. I think maybe there's an element of it being so timely that we, just watching it and listening to it in 2021, it just strikes us as, like... out of date as well as being bad. So it's like, it's kind of anachronistic almost watching it. Because I think everything else in the show does not feel that way. It feels kind of timeless.
That could be true. Because like Visiting Day is a very good fake 90s band name if you're talking Matchbox 20. But it has that double layer of funny now that it wouldn't have at the time where it's old fat. Exactly what you're saying. So maybe that is what makes it seem even sillier now. But... you know, it does. This whole plot is the least interesting one they've had on the show so far. Because it's really the focus of this episode too. Because next up, you're getting Hesh and Massive Genius having their meeting. They're talking about how Hesh has bought all these horses with like money that Massive Genius thinks he wasn't owned. And Hesh is like, Massive Genius, huh? Man, I think you're a dumb cunt. It's a tense meeting.
Yeah. And Christopher is like, no, I think you should do it. Listen to the guy. He owes him money. And Tony is like, what the fuck are you doing? I think Hesh. Hesh maybe is like, shut up.
You're completely out of line, kid. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
And like, Massive Genius is right here. He's like, oh, so did you write? How much of the song did you write? What was your involvement in that process?
Yeah.
And Hesh's point is basically like, hey, fuck you. I got the money. So it's my money. That's my right, right to it. I stole it back then and you can't have it now.
Right. Yeah. Everyone was doing it, you know. But he does say, I think then, if not later, like, well, I did propel a lot of like young black kids to stardom. So
right.
I don't know.
But what's that worth if you're keeping their money along the way? Like,
yeah, exactly.
He doesn't have much of a leg to stand on. I think it's pretty clear here that Hesh is like, oh, well, fuck you. That's my point.
Yes. Yeah.
And he tells, totally. Massive Genius tells Tony, like, hey, I know your father was also a silent partner in this, so how about fuck off? Mm. And so he asks for $400,000 is what he is looking for after they have a little bit of racially charged banter.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm skipping through over the thing here. They have a long argument. Paulie. There's one point where he says something a little bit rude and Paulie steps forward. He's like, oh, yeah, what are you going to do about? Like, there's so many of his guys here as well, Paulie. Shut up.
Yeah.
It's just so stupid. But so they can't reach an agreement and the meeting is kind of a bust there.
Yes.
Speaking of meetings, they're all the well-meaning, well-to-do, you know, upper class. Hey, we would never touch our toes in this water.
Yep.
Cusimano and Melfi's there, and a couple of other people. They're having a little dinner party, and kind of mocking the fact that Tony Soprano's living next door. Because I think that he brings up the cigars, Cusimano, and they're like, "What does it do to the property prices to have a gangster living next door?"
God, that's the fact that this is the other plot line. Yeah, that really underlines how shitty this episode. Well, not shitty.
It's the worst one so far.
Silliest. Too many caricatures. All of these people, the people who goes plays golf with later, they're all not real people.
Just much, much weaker writing in this. Like the thing that is this show's big strength totally is mostly missing from this episode. Where exactly what you're saying, these people seem silly the whole time. Yeah. They're all going like whacking. Listen to that. Whacking. What kind of a... Can you imagine whacking someone? It just like, okay.
It plays like a sketch. It plays like a sketch almost, yeah.
Well, and then, you know, Melfi is visibly getting a bit fed up with them. And then she goes off to the bathroom and like stands on the toilet to have a look at Tony's house and like hears a weird scream. And it's all just like, what the fuck is...
Yeah, because the resolution of that is not anything like, she has a peep out the hexagonal porthole.
Yeah.
And hears someone basically going,
It happens in a scene a little bit later on, but it's during the same dinner. Because meanwhile, Christopher and Adriana and Massive Genius are watching Visiting Day.
Right.
It's some fucking shit song about erase myself. I want to erase myself. Like, all right, man, do it then. Jesus.
Yeah.
And Adriana is very, like, pro this band. She's like, look, he's been through a lot. His lyrics are deep, blah, blah, blah. Listen to the music. Aren't they playing loudly? And the entire crowd is booing this band.
Yeah, the crowd of, it looks like members of the gang from the Warriors.
Yeah, it's like people who went out immediately after a Guns N' Roses tribute act audition session.
Yes.
Like, it's
The American Idol, it wasn't American Idol, but the competition to replace Michael Hutchins, the NXS.
The one where Tommy Lee was one of the judges, is that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So they were all auditioning to replace Axl Rose.
It's so stupid. Like, it looks dumb. The booing is weird. Everything is just off in this episode. It's so strange.
Also, they're not booing at the start of this scene.
No,
they're playing this song for ages, like 4 minutes. They're having a nice chat. Adriana's like being, you know, like you said, sort of telling the backstory. Christopher's just kind of like looking around.
Yeah.
Massive Genius seems to be having a good time, but as is pointed out later, is looking at Adriana a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only, until they cut to the crowd that they start booing. So
yeah,
it's,
they really wait for these guys to wrap up their conversation before they jump in with a couple of heckles. It's again, just the tone of this one is just a bit off.
Yeah.
Then Adriana tells some story about how the lead singer got electrocuted trying to grill a trout on a like live.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, okay, yeah. I guess so. But she says it. Christopher's just like, oh, yeah, did he?
It's totally. Such a weird backstory for this guy.
It's so weird. And then, like, that electrocution turned his life around?
Yeah. Yeah, apparently.
And so Christopher wasn't really sure, but Adriana kind of convinces him, like, okay, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. Let's go with these guys. Let's try and push them. We'll manage, we'll be these guys' managers, I guess, basically.
Right, so, yeah.
Meanwhile, Tony Soprano's having another chat to Melfi. He's back in her office, and he's talking about how he's not particularly interested in hanging out with these fucking people. He's like, I'm hanging out with these white guys. And she's like, you're not white? And he's like, no, I'm not like this type of white. I'm not talking about like all this boring shit that these people will talk about, and you know, everyone will judge me if I hang out with them. I don't want to do it. And he's talking about like wasps, basically.
Pretty much, but also like Italian, like I guess the friends of Cusimano are probably wasps, right? Like they're Anglo Protestant, norm, like quote unquote stereotypically normal 50s image of Americans. Cusimano, he calls like a white bread wop.
Yeah. And he's looking at it all through race because it's Tony Soprano here. But what he's talking about is rich hypocrites who are like fucking jerks.
Yeah, neoliberals, right?
Yeah.
That's basically what he's saying. He doesn't know that term. That term doesn't come around for another decade or so, or maybe like 5 years, I guess. Nah. It's sort of around the... But yeah, he's talking about normal people, quote-unquote normal people.
Exactly. But he's talking like private schoolboy dads.
Yeah, true.
The type of people that are exactly who these people are that we see later on at the golf course and shit that we'll get into. But meanwhile,
I guess people who have as much money as Tony Soprano does, but have got it through still immoral means, but legal ones.
Right, exactly. They've stepped on heads that they were allowed to step on.
Yep.
Versus Tony, who steps on whatever the fuck head I want.
That's right.
And yeah, Melfi tells him, oh, well, I was at the Cusimano's house and I looked at your house and I heard a scream.
That's right. Yeah. Did you hear anything maybe that night?
Strange noises. Tony's like, nah, what? And then he's like, so you saw my house, huh? Huh. And he walks out. He's looking a bit, okay, yeah, interesting.
Yeah. She saw how my... I don't know if it was like, must have been impressed by my big house.
Yeah.
Or... she's thinking about me.
Exactly. It's that.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
So you took the time out of your day, huh? Interesting.
Right. Right.
Let's get back to that gabagool.
So Tony and Carmela do go to this barbecue. They're having the boring conversations Tony was afraid of. This guy's like, oh man, that sausage looked good. Where's that sausage from? I think someplace in Garfield. Honey, where's it from? Someplace in Garfield. And like,
yeah.
Pretty good fucking shit people to hang around conversation. They start talking about tits to try and... It seems really put on.
It really does. I think that they feel emasculated standing next to Tony.
Yeah. I've just to be clear, to anyone who doesn't spend a lot of time hanging around with just men, we don't really talk about tits.
No, I don't think that we ever have, in terms of you and me and our friends.
I wouldn't be able to tell you any of my friends' opinions on tits for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, we mostly talk about other comedians, movies, TV shows, food that we just ate.
Yeah.
The news.
Yeah.
That's honestly about it.
I would feel uncomfortable talking about tits.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do it. So, it feels like either these guys are... I mean, Tony has a lot to do with tits, but he's not the one talking about this, is my point. He's like...
Yeah,
it's
he's gone there with the intention of like fitting in.
Right. There's just something about it that makes it seem like these people are like exactly what he thinks, where it's this veneer of a smile, but behind it, it's all fake and it's all worse than it seems.
Yep.
And it comes across well. And then they start talking about the, you know, investments and stocks and whatever, something called Dexplex. And then when Tony gets a bit interested in it, they shut the fuck up. Because they don't want an actual criminal coming in and fucking it up for the criminals that they are.
Totally, yeah. Whether it's the criminal side of it or just like someone outside of their exclusive circle of rich people, right. Which, yeah, again, it's a social, socially rich. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a different. It's not just the money that makes them special.
Exactly,
and they're excluding him from that.
They're in the right club here. And meanwhile, the women who are all off separately are doing the same thing, and they suggest something called American biotics to Carmella.
Yeah, they're less exclusive than the men. They're just like having a chat.
So meanwhile, Hesh is having a little think about what he's done. He's looking at all these old posters on the wall of all his old acts and shows they played and stuff like that, listening to some music. Looks like he's questioning his decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thinking about whether or not maybe Massive Genius has a point. At the same time as that, there's the actual production of this music is going ahead. They're recording a demo to play for Massive Genius. We find out it's day 3 of this recording, and it is going really badly. It's like shit.
It sounds like shit. The writing obviously is terrible, but yeah, they're not taking to the recording session well at all. The engineer is a veteran and is like trying to be tactful at the start, but it's clear to everyone except Adriana. I think even the band knows it's not going great.
Right. I think Chris knows he's out of his depth here too. He's not even trying to pay attention. He's just taking cues from Adriana. But this engineer looks fucking fed up. He wants to call it and just like he knows there's no point in keeping going with this. But Adriana's like, no, come on, let's go. Let's get this done. We're all right. And then Chris really pushes the no, fucking do this now. I've paid for 5 days of studio time. I'm livid here. What's the fucking problem? And they're all saying that they're tired. He suggests they take a bunch of drugs to keep them awake.
God,
he can't believe that they won't.
Yep.
And then the engineer guy's like, do you know what the fucking problem is? You haven't written a chorus for this.
Yeah. I thought that was a good, like, interesting bit of detail to be like, yeah, he has legitimate criticisms. He's not just saying you're bad. He's like, you don't know how to write songs, and this is why.
Yeah. And if it was me singing in this band, when he said, this song isn't as good as She Loves You, I might have thrown back a, yeah.
Yeah. Of course not, buddy.
Did you produce that song, you fuckhead?
Yeah.
And then I'd have smashed a guitar on him. But Chris smashes a guitar on
fucking Richie.
On Richie. Gives him a second electrocution there. And Carmella is off back in her house buying some American biotics stock.
Yeah, she's doing it. She's taking the money that I guess she has a right to. And pouring, she buys 5,000 shares, which is lots.
It seems like a lot.
Like shares can be, they can be a dollar, but they can be like $25 a share. They can be $100 a share. They can be, Apple shares are like what, 3,500 a share.
I think she's put a lot of money into this.
I would be, I would assume it's like, $50,000 or something like that.
Something like that. But, and it's kind of because she she's doing the thing that Tony said they should do, which is diversify and get into stocks, but he's not doing it.
No.
So she's like, okay, well, I have to do this for my family. Like, we need money as well if you go. So, and also Meadow catches her and they go off to the shops together or something.
Yeah.
I assume this is going to come back in a later episode because it doesn't really lead to anything here.
No, you're right. It's like act two in a three-act structure where the first act was Carmella being worried about money. The second act is her investing money. And then, you're right. There's going to be some payoff.
Because it doesn't show that she doesn't trust Tony or, there's no thing in and of this act itself that gives us any story there.
Yeah.
So either this is a very bad episode or something is coming back later. But meanwhile, Tony's taken Cusimano up on the golf offer and they're all out on the course. And straight away, these fucking pricks are into like, so how real is The Godfather?
Yeah. What is there's a sentence they started with like, I don't want to cross the, tell me if this is you know, asking too much.
Yeah.
Tell me if this makes you uncomfortable.
Let me know if I'm stepping on your toes here, is what they say.
Right, 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 right.
But they're bringing up Al Capone, the Godfather.
Yeah.
They're saying, like, did you ever meet John Gotti? And eventually Tony's like, all right, yeah, I met John Gotti. He bought an ice cream truck that I wanted.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, because that... story is like he's implying what the there was money hidden in the truck, or like he's telling like a little mob myth, which I assume is all made up, and he's, you know,
yeah,
he's broken, yeah, his spirit is broken. He realizes these guys are taking, like, exploiting him.
Yes,
you know, they're totally exploiting him.
I think he's fucking with like, him, yeah, to be honest. I think this story is just like meant to be this weird and boring story. They're like, okay, you want to know the real shit? Here's this dumb thing to make you stop asking questions.
Yeah, yep, I can see that.
That's kind of what it felt like to me, because they're all kind of like wide-eyed, and he's putting on this face that he never does. Yeah. He's like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. He's like making a big meal out of looking around.
Yes, he's good.
He thinks these guys are fucking pricks, and he's right.
His bad acting is better than the bad music.
Right.
Tonally, all of that stuff, like, that holds up.
I mean, you say that this bad acting is better than the bad music, but then we get this new track from Visiting Day. Yeah. Most of which is the word meow. And Adriana and Massive Genius are kind of meowing at each other here very fucking awkwardly.
Yeah.
It's such a bad song. To the point of being insane. And so, yeah, she's like dancing. Or they're showing the demo tape to Massive Genius, Chris and Adriana.
Yep.
And yeah, this is, Chris really starts to notice here, like, oh, okay, Massive Genius is like looking at Adriana's butt is what's going on with this deal here.
Yep. Yeah.
And he's still into it, so he goes and gets a second opinion from Hesh, who says, yeah, this music is fucking terrible. I can't tell you why. I just know a hit is a hit.
Right. A hit is a hit, and he's right. That's the case with all art. You often can't quite define why something is good or bad.
Yeah. It would take roughly an hour if you were to do a podcast analysis of a piece of art to say whether or not it was good or bad, or like, yeah, whatever, yeah.
I mean, and you might even say within the first minute of that hour that the piece of art is bad and then continue to talk about it.
Yeah, and try to define it, but kind of struggle. So just really it could have left it at a 4-second long episode. Yeah,
this one not so good. We'll see you next week.
No, don't worry about this. We'll go to 11.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, Chris now has a bit of perspective on whether or not this music is good. And I find it funny that he genuinely doesn't seem to be able to figure that out on his own.
Yeah, he literally can't tell. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
He accepts that. There's no element of him being like, right, having a false ego about it or any sort of misconceptions. He's like, music, it's not my thing.
All of these guys seem to share that, which is kind of cool. Like Paulie as well, you imagine he'd be like, and that's fine. It doesn't make me less confident.
Yeah,
I don't need to know. Yeah. It's fucking totally stupid to know. They will get to it at some point. Then you're like, okay, well, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But so Tony's telling Melfi, he's back in her office, telling her this story about a kid they used to bully when they were growing up, and they would invite him around to things when they wanted to laugh at him.
Yeah, they would like get him to sing songs and stuff. He had a cleft palate.
Yeah.
And he had a funny voice, in their opinion, and they just made him basically dance for them.
And Tony regretted this at some point. He figured out that that kid didn't enjoy it, and he says that he felt shame about that and he felt bad about it, but he never really knew how that kid felt being brought into this group only to be, you know, like a dancing monkey, I think he calls him.
Yeah.
And now he's like, oh, but I'm that kid now for these fucking cunts, Kuzumano and all of them. A dancing bear, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. These two therapy sessions, like the rest of the episode, just kind of like bald-faced exposition.
They really are, aren't they?
Yeah, there's not any like genuine sort of character development, because we kind of already see that point that Tony's made.
Right, totally. And Tony is just really laying it out there, this kid Jimmy Smash.
Yeah, which is a great name.
It is a good name. You're right. These are a lot more narrating to the audience what is going on inside of Tony's head than these therapy sessions normally are.
You want to know something? one of the co-writers of this episode.
Yeah.
This is his only episode of The Sopranos that he wrote.
Right.
His other credits include The Chris Isaak Show, in which he wrote one episode.
And that's everything he's ever done?
Yeah. And there was another co-writer who has written, he's written 13 episodes of The Sopranos.
Okay.
Looks like most of them within the first two seasons.
Do Sopranos episodes generally have two writers? Because here's my guess at what's happened there is they've gotten the script, they've gone, fuck, it's too late to get a brand new script. Bring this guy and get him to fix it up as much as possible.
That's not a bad guess. Let me see if I can fucking navigate to the next episode or another episode that he wrote.
Yeah.
Full cast and crew.
Well, in the meantime...
No, it's another duo. It's another duo.
Okay.
But I also wouldn't be surprised if what you said happened. Happened.
Sure. Well, yeah, this Chris Isaak Show guy seems to be the problem with this episode.
Yes.
Because then we get Massive Genius. He's hanging out by his big pool and he gets a call from Hesh, who is telling him, go fuck yourself, basically.
Yeah.
And so Massive Genius is like, okay, I'll retaliate. And Hesh is like, all right, bring your fucking worst on. And, you know, all the other, the mob guys are sitting behind Hesh. And he's like, cool, I'm on the phone to my lawyers right now. I'm going to call them.
Yeah.
I'm going to get all that money back. So, you know, Massive Genius is, he's going to do it the legitimate way by fucking Hesh with lawyers, which is probably the harder way to fuck someone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's longer. It's more costly. Is it within the same conversation that Hesh is like, you use this sample that was... Yeah. So it's like, I'm going to fight back, but it's going to be a long and costly fight.
Yeah, we're doing this in the courts. And they hang up the call and all the mob guys are like, huh, weird. Getting lawyers involved, not the way we'd have done it. It's a new day. It's pretty crazy as Paulie's taking off body armor.
Yes, that was, yeah. I also noted that as being maybe the funniest thing in the episode.
Oh, fucking Paulie's so good, man.
Oh, he's great. He's very good.
Adriana's trying on some dresses that, you know, are going to be helpful for the new managing career. But then Christopher's like, hey, look. We got a problem here. I think it's important that you mentally prepare yourself for the fucking possibility that visiting day sucks. And she gets really upset with him. She's like, I thought you believed in me, da da da. You went and got some experts to listen to it. Fuck you. That's, you know, you don't trust me. You don't think I can do this. And he's like, well, yeah, maybe we can't.
I in the TV Tropes recap that I'm just sort of, you know, using as a reference point, he's described as abrasively pointing out how she's letting emotion cloud her judgment. I thought he did this pretty well.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, they have an argument here, but it's not, it's tense because he is trying to say to her, you might not be able to do this thing you want to do. The reality is that you might not be good enough.
Yes. Like there's no way that you can say that without the impact being hurtful because it is just a hurtful truth. It's a hurtful reality. But I think he's being as tactful as this guy, a mafia soldier, can possibly be.
And Christopher, also, this is the way he treats things himself, I think, which is like, know your limits. Don't get in over your head with this sort of like... When he didn't do the second truck robbery with what's-his-name, that was the same thing where he's having to be honest with himself, hey, maybe I can't get what I want all the time.
Yeah, right.
And like, it's harsh, and but it's worse to sort of... Like it's more condescending to just go like, yeah, you have your fun with your thing, because then you're not taking that person seriously and you're thinking what they're trying to do is just like a little game that it doesn't matter if they win or lose at. But he's you know, it's an important conversation to have, but it's one that maybe, you know, Adriana isn't ready for yet, or Christopher is bringing up at the wrong time, or maybe they could have tried out some different things or whatever. Like, it's not the most supportive thing in the world, but it's not the worst either. You know what I mean?
Totally, absolutely, yes, and you're right. It's not just the condescending nature of like supporting something that you think that this person will eventually find out is not for them. It's also like Adriana shouldn't waste her time, you know?
Right.
If you do respect her, you don't want her to pour herself into something that it seems she's actually being taken advantage of.
Right. You know, it's so much more patronizing to be like, yeah, whatever, you go off and you play with your managing game. Like, that, I would be so much more hurt if someone thought I couldn't do it the whole time and never told me than if someone was like, hey, maybe this ain't the road we should be on.
Yeah, you've got talent, you've got skills, you're a personable, friendly person who can, like, get shit done. Find the thing that you are good at.
And that's the thing. At one point in the conversation, she does go like, what, you think I don't have any talent? And he's like pretty, he doesn't say anything back. And so that's maybe the bit where it's like, oh, maybe your judgment of her is harsher than it needs to be. But this music management thing clearly wasn't working.
Yeah.
He's right about that. But maybe he is being slightly abrasive in it, in that he's making it about something larger than the thing. I don't know.
Right.
Speaking of large, to message is a large word, and I'll be honest, I don't know what it means.
Okay.
Because
why come up?
American Biotics to Messent splits 3-1 is the headline that Carmela is reading. And I don't know what that means in regards to stocks. Is it doing well or doing poorly?
I would assume it's doing well, because doesn't tumescent mean like growing?
Yes. Don't know. Tumescent means like, growing?
Yeah, it's becoming swollen. It's a biological term.
I'd have said it was a spice. So.
Yeah, it means growing. It means swelling up.
Okay. Oh, swollen or becoming swollen, especially as a response to sexual arousal. So that's a strange word to use for stocks in the paper.
Right.
But
it means they're going well. Is that what it means?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Carmela's reading that, and then she fucking hides the newspaper when Tony comes in. She puts it in the knife and fork drawer.
Right.
So she is doing the stock stuff behind his back.
Yes.
But Tony comes in because he's had a very good idea for a prank: to fill a box with sand and then shiftily hand it over to Cusimano to get him to look after it for a while.
That is a good prank. I like
it. It's pretty good. And Carmela's into it too.
Yeah. Because I guess she sees through their bullshit as well. Like she may have followed their stock tip and had... She's much more able to play nice and be friendly and fit in.
Right.
But she's not an idiot.
Totally.
She knows that they're dickheads.
Like, she was the one wanting to hang out with these people, but I don't think she's doing it because she just enjoys their company. She wants to be in that social... beneficial social echelon. Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, they're having a talk and Cusimano tries to get Tony to stop calling him Cus, and he's like, nah, well, I'm going to call you Cus.
it doesn't mean, you know, because it means like what, pussy?
Yeah.
Or it means
it
like
doesn't mean the
a,
thing you
a,
think yeah. anymore, but it definitely does. He tells him to hang on to this box. He's pretty happy about it, but also clearly, you know, this is brought up. Him having to interact with Cusimano and think about the reasons that he doesn't like Cusimano sends him down to the basement where he starts frustratedly pumping iron and making the screaming noise that Melfi heard the other day.
Yeah, which it's like, okay, she thought someone was getting hit or killed or something and it's Tony working out. Like,
yeah.
I don't really care.
If you were being really generous to this episode, you could say that they're trying to show that Tony is hiding more from Melfi than he is telling her still. Maybe.
Right.
That he's got frustrations that he's not addressing directly with Melfi, because she hears them, she directly brings it up with them, and he doesn't explain it to her.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like the reverse. It's like she assumes it's something mob-related, but for him it's something personal, something social.
So she also sees him not that differently to how Cusimano and all of them are seeing him as this like a mob spectacle. But I don't know if that comes across at all. I think that is something that you could add on to this episode, but I don't think it's necessarily there, even if they intended it. It doesn't work well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But whatever it is, Tony's fucking frustrated still. So is Christopher. He's sitting in the pool room at the back of the Bada Bing, and Hesh comes in to... What does he say here? He just gives him a little word of like, hey, Chris, you know, keep it up, kid, or something, right? Doesn't he just give him a little bit of a... He comes in and there's a song playing, and Hesh is like, now that's a hit there.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know what's really going on with that either. And then you get one last little shot of Kusumano and his wife, like, discussing whether or not to open this box and being freaked out by it. Just a little joke right. to end on.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's your episode.
There you go.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Like, some stuff happens that, like, yeah, like you said, with Tony's emotional arc, it's like, that's interesting, but it's so poorly represented.
Yeah. I agree. It's just, it's an off episode, but we've both already watched the next episode here, and we're going to record that episode straight after this in real time. And let me tell you, we're back on the wagon.
Man, it might be the best episode.
Right.
Directly follows the worst.
It's a big return to form. And then we've got two more to wrap up the season, and I'm so into where the end of the season is going after the next episode. So don't let this forgettable. It's a bad episode. It's that episode of Cheers where Sam and Diane get married in court. It's so stupid. I've been watching Cheers as well. I'm not going to do a fucking podcast about Cheers, but it's a good thing to have on while you're cooking or whatever. And let me tell you, that show gets really bad at points.
Yeah.
So this isn't as bad as the worst of Cheers.
No, I was going to say, totally, the lows of The Sopranos are still pretty high.
Yeah.
As you said, forget about it.
Maybe that stock thing's going to come back up. I genuinely don't know.
Me neither.
But it seems like everything else is just...
Yeah.
So,
but whatever. Thank you for listening to this episode. Yes. I hope that us tearing it apart, or at least, you know, nitpicking it a little bit, was gratifying if you also didn't like it. And like I said, I think we talked out some of the interesting things that maybe you don't get just from watching it. But... we'll be back next week with a fucking banger of an episode.
A hell of a banger.
Yes. So thank you for listening. Instagram, Gabagool Pod. Hit us up. Send us a message. Like the posts. Share them around. That's my advice to you.
Do what you
and
like.
And if you want to email us, you can do what you like. Email us, gabagoolboys@gmail.com. Thanks for everyone who has so far. Very, very nice to hear from people around the world. And we will see you next week.
Hell yeah.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at oseamalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.